Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I mean, veganism gets a reputation for being exclusive, but really, barring allergies, anybody can eat it, and it should be very welcoming, so that's my attitude about it.
Joshua Plug used to travel around the country as the lead singer of several punk bands. Now he's on the road cooking. We got an invite to one of his pop-up cafes where the food is vegan and all are welcome. Farmers know that trying new things is both risky and necessary, and success means not just growing something new, but also selling it. Harvest Public Media has more. Chef Daniel Orr has a garden project for us today, and then he preserves grape leaves and mashes some rutabagas. And we visit the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market to check out some tomato seeds. Three stories caught the attention of our news bloggers this week. First, news from Washington that's been a long time coming.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a farm bill. After 2 years of brinkmanship and deadlock, farm bill negotiators announced that they have finally reached a compromise that both parties could live with. The bill cuts direct subsidy payments to farmers and $9 billion from the food stamp program over the next decade. The cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in the plan fall far short of the $39 billion Republicans proposed previously. But anti-hunger advocates are not impressed. A cut in food stamp payments went into effect in November that slashed $29 per month for a family of three. The Farm Bill proposal would cut 1% from the SNAP budget, reducing monthly benefits by $90 for about 850,000 households. Negotiators said the bill would achieve food stamp savings by shrinking payments, but not by removing anyone from the program. The bill also heads off a milkpocalypse that would have sent subsidies back in time and doubled the price to about $7 per gallon. 2014 is shaping up to be a big year in the tussle over pesticides used in agriculture, including neonicotinoids, as beekeepers urge regulators to consider the chemical's broader environmental impacts, such as damage to bees. Last year, the EPA registered a new pesticide, sulfoxaflor. The pesticides developer, Dow Agro, said sulfoxaflor is a more bee-friendly alternative that lingers for less time than older agrochemicals that farmers currently use. But a brood of beekeeping industry groups filed an appeal, alleging that the EPA used weak field tests and ignored the group's warnings when it gave the chemical a green light. The lawsuit also claims that label restrictions the EPA issued are ineffective, and the agency failed to weigh the economic impact on beekeepers in its decision. Dow and beekeeping groups don't agree about whether the chemical should technically be classified as a neonicotinoid. But it's a neurotoxin that works similarly by making the whole plant poisonous to insects. That means the pollen and nectar also become toxic during and after use. The EPA is expected to file a response by mid-February, and a hearing could get underway in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco by late summer or early fall. And for the first time in 2 decades, nutrition labels on food will be updated to reflect changes in nutrition science. The FDA rolled out the modern nutrition label in 1993. 20 years ago, nutritionists were more concerned with fat. Now, with more health focus on carbohydrates, food labels will provide a comprehensive breakdown of sugar content and a more prominent display of calories. Other changes include listing measurements in teaspoons as well as grams and explaining serving size. Health advocates have also recommended including the percentages of whole wheat, added sugars and syrups, and labeling the front of the package instead of the back. The FDA says, while changes should start within a few months, it's not sure when the new labels will reach supermarkets. These stories are filed on our website. Read more at eartheats.org and connect with us on Twitter for food news as it happens. Search for Earth Eats.
Thanks for the headlines, Luann Johnson, here every week.
Glad to do it.
In the Midwest, crop agriculture is sometimes divided between the major commodities, corn, soybeans, and wheat, and everything else. Switching to an untested crop is risky for farmers, but sometimes agronomics and market forces meet in a sweet spot, and farmers can reap the benefits. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports.
So please welcome Andrew Pitts, folks. At an Iowa Farm Bureau gathering, Andrew Pitts puts up a PowerPoint slideshow of his family's Sawmill Hollow farm.
This is a little bit more technology than we have at the farm.
What they do have is what they believe is the first commercial-scale aronia berry farm in the United States. You may recognize the dark native fruit by its common name, black chokeberry. Pitts says the business grew from his father's astute observations of so-called superfruits, acai and goji berries. The elder Pitts noticed that aronia berries were in many of the superfruit products and wanted to capitalize on that fad.
My dad said, I think we can grow this here. And looked into it, but no one had any, there was no knowledge of growing the aronia berry.
They found some plants and gave it a go. Planting the bushes and harvesting the fruit make up one critical part of the business. Equally important is courting and nurturing the market.
When you're doing something new, you develop both simultaneously. So we've been developing the best practices in agriculture as we've been developing the best practices in the marketplace.
Pitts's work has paid off. His berries are found in products sold nationwide, from chili starter and salsa to health supplements. And now other Midwestern farmers are growing the fruit, too. Another option for diversifying is to expand a crop currently grown on a small scale. Iowa State Extension horticulture professor Ajay Nair is looking into whether the Midwest might grow more of its own sweet potatoes, a crop primarily grown in the South.
Before growing it on larger acreage, the growers have to first identify their markets. Because if there is no market, there is no point if it's a crop is a specialty crop or a commodity crop. If you can't sell it, it doesn't make any sense.
That's why the vegetable that's currently leaping from specialty niche crop to commercial scale is sweet corn. Bird's Eye Foods, the Minnesota frozen food giant, came south looking for growers last year.
Hi, Greg.
Greg Reinhart is one of the Boone County, Iowa farmers who met with Bird's Eye.
And they came down and they were looking for some growers to grow a super sweet corn for their frozen sweet corn line. And they wanted about 600 acres here in central Iowa.
Thanks to contracts that guaranteed prices and soil that yielded well, the experiment worked. In his dining room, Reinhart displays a small sign that says, "Peas, farm fresh." This year, he'll grow those for Bird's Eye, too. The company wants 1,000 acres of peas and 2,000 acres of sweet corn in central Iowa this year.
They want early production of peas down our way, and then before they start their pea picking up and around the Minnesota area.
By creating a market and offering a good price, Bird's Eye has little trouble attracting growers. That's what some extension researchers hope to do for the Indian spice fenugreek on the plains of western Nebraska. Fenugreek is used in medicine, and they hope it can fuel a new farm-to-pharma industry. The University of Nebraska Medical Center and area farmers are intrigued. With corn prices falling and more international competition for commodities like soybeans and wheat, the shrewd business owners on Midwestern farmland need to have innovation and change, and maybe someday sweet potatoes or fenugreek, in their toolkits. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration focused on issues of food, fuel, and field. More stories like this one at harvestpublicmedia.org. Eric Iote and Charlie Jones have just moved into their house on the west side of Bloomington, and today they're throwing a dinner party for their friends. Iote moved all the chairs and the couch and the TV out of the way.
We are in our living room that we've now kind of changed and formed into a little cafe, so we have three tables and a bunch of chairs set up, trying to give as much of an authentic cafe feel as we possibly can here at our house.
They're anticipating about 25 guests today, although they opened up the invitation to friends of friends, so who knows how many people could show up. It's about 1 hour before people should start filing in. At this point, most dinner party hosts would be frantic with last-minute preparations. But Eric and Charlie are calm. They're chill. That roasted vegetable casserole that's filling the space with some amazing smells, well, they had nothing to do with it. Jones says this is one of the easiest dinner parties she's ever had to throw.
Yeah, that's quite accurate, actually. We get to host people, make people feel welcome, but we don't have to do any of the cooking. That's nice. I didn't really think of it that way. We got a wonderful chef here to cook all the food.
The chef is a soft-spoken guy who's mopping his sweaty brow and breathing a sigh of relief after a long day of cooking.
Yeah, you gotta come in here first. Oh. I'm hiding things in here.
We're in the laundry room, by the way, where I like to hide things.
Joshua Plug has scattered the 6 courses for his vegan feast all over the house.
There's ample space here, but if I'm plating 2, then I have to put things in cubbyholes.
You have to get creative. We're literally on top of the dryer now.
Dryer.
What is going on?
Oh, that's my dessert.
Oh, so we'll be back. Okay. We'll come back.
Yeah, he'll describe the food in a second. Ask Plug where he's from, and he's not really sure how to answer. He's been traveling the country for much of the past couple years, and that suits him just fine. He started off as a musician, traveling from basement show to basement show with several different punk bands. Occasionally, he would make food at the shows or do a cooking demonstration. Eventually, he got enough positive feedback that he compiled his own cookbook. He then tapped into his existing contacts in the DIY music scene to jumpstart his idea of a traveling pop-up cafe.
And the tour model is absolutely from playing in punk bands, and I just decided that it was a great idea to use that model to cook. And it actually works better for cooking than it does for playing music, because I make more money, it's just me, I can stay in a town, and your band's not going to play 7 shows in Minneapolis, but I can cook 7 dinners without much trouble there.
And he's been cooking in other people's kitchens for the past 10 years. This isn't a money-making venture for Plug. Visitors are encouraged to pay a donation, which goes toward groceries and his travel expenses. But back to the food.
Yeah, the soup is like a minestrone, but it's lima bean-based, because I really like lima beans and butter beans, and people don't really use them enough, so they're in there. And a gluten-free pasta. It's like a roasted pepper, tomato, and paprika broth with cinnamon, so it's hearty and it's tasteful. And then onto the fridge, here we got a pineapple Caesar, which is awesome, and that should be good. It'll refresh people. And in between that and the main dish, which is this, it's like a roasted vegetable tureen. So
open in the oven.
Yeah, it's like got crispy potatoes on top and soft potatoes and rutabaga on the bottom, and a layer of spinach and onions and roasted eggplant. And we have a side of a black-eyed pea coleslaw with purple cabbage and a cider vinaigrette, scallion and cilantro, and this little rice pilaf with white asparagus and Italian parsley for
the
side.
Back to the laundry room.
Oh yeah, my little, what this is, it's a brownie shortbread.
In case you missed that, the dessert course is a brownie shortbread with fruit compote.
Well, so did you see eggplant and red cabbage, and you're like, okay, yes. So now I'm starting to get a vision.
That's totally. I did the way that I normally come up with recipes, which is I walk into a space and see ingredients and then start thinking in my head all the different things I could do with it. And then I write notes in line as we're checking out, and everything's going by the conveyor belt, which is fun because then usually the checker's looking at me funny. Then I explain the whole secret cafe idea or whatever, like the traveling paid dinner party idea, and they're amazed.
The hosts of the party are equally amazed. Jones went shopping with him this morning, so she knew what components he purchased, but she couldn't sketch out the menu on the chalkboard in the living room until just a few minutes ago, when the dishes were basically complete.
I don't even know if Joshua knew what he was cooking. He just goes for it. I was surprised at how spontaneous he is about the whole thing, but that adds to the excitement, so I'm even more intrigued as to what we're going to be eating now.
Welcome.
Take a seat wherever you like.
Okay.
This is the best
yeah.
seat. Because it's like...
To start the appetizers at any point. There's napkins. We have limited plates, so we're starting the appetizers off with some napkins. If you that's all right, but you're welcome to dig into those.
Plug plates up the first course of his Mediterranean meets Californian vegan Hoosier feast. That's what he's calling it. Will Eric's and Charlie's friends like what the Plug pop-up cafe has to offer?
As we'll find out.
It's certainly a treat because usually I always cook at home.
The appetizers are out.
The quinoa dolmates and mixed nut and dill pesto stuffed mushrooms. I've never tried a dolmate, so I don't know what one tastes like.
Okay. Mm. My first impression is floral. It's really yummy.
They are really good.
Oh my goodness. What's in here?
I mean, veganism gets a reputation for being exclusive, but really, barring allergies, anybody can eat it, and it should be very welcoming, so that's my attitude about it.
Joshua Plug just released a new cookbook, This Ain't No Picnic, Your Punk Rock Vegan Cookbook. You can get a copy of that on his website, joshuaplug.blogspot.com, and Plug is spelled P-L-O-E-G. He's got a recipe for a vegan banh mi, which is a Vietnamese sandwich. And then scroll down a little bit on his website, and there's a picture of him singing with one of his many former punk bands. A really eclectic guy. All this information can be found on our website, nice and easy to remember, eartheats.org. We ate some vegan dolmas, or stuffed grape leaves, at Josh Plug's pop-up cafe. Chef Daniel Orr is lucky to have access to grape vines right across from his mom's house in Columbus, Indiana. He grabbed some leaves back in the summer when the vines were really flourishing and preserved them in brine for use later in the year.
All right, so we have these vine leaves. We're just going to snip off the stems. And again, you're looking for these ones that almost feel like a kid glove. They're really soft and tender. And it's nice when you have nice big ones like this that are still tender. Okay, we'll give these guys a nice wash first. Okay, and then I've got a canning jar. Fold the two sides over like wings and then roll them. And so you could do a bunch of these, and then you put these in your canning jar. And you could probably fit about 4 or 5 rolls of the grape leaves in each jar. And then all you have to do is pour the brine over them while it's boiling. You want a nice salty water. This is going to cook and tenderize and also preserve them. The salt is a preservative. And then I'm just going to cover it, let that cool down to room temperature, and then keep it in the refrigerator. And that will last up to a year in the refrigerator.
Something to keep in mind once the leaves start coming back. No need to go buy grape leaves. Make them yourself. Lots of DIY ideas at eartheats.org. Coming up, Red Rosa Farms is offering 60 varieties of heirloom tomato seeds for sale today at the Bloomington Winters Farmers Market.
I've always saved seeds for myself, but about 5 years ago, I started offering our tomato seeds. And of course, I've selected for my very favorites over time.
Farmer Kathy Crossan and the one tomato variety she would take with her to a desert island just ahead. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all 4 locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com.
If you see me walking down the street, and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by, walk on by, make believe that you don't see the tears, just let me grieve.
These are big suckers. They're waxy too. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan.
So these are the rutabagas. And again, this is one of those very intimidating vegetables. You go to the market and you don't know what the heck to do with it. And, you know, so a lot of people just walk right on by, like the old song goes. But they're very, very easy to use. In Scotland, they call them nips. They call both rutabaga and parsnips nips. Classic Burns dinner is the haggis with nips and taties, which are mashed turnips, or rutabaga, and mashed potatoes. And we're just trimming off that waxy exterior. All right, so once you've got it peeled, it's not quite as frightening, kind of like the celery root. Got some cooked. I cooked them about halfway in water, then drained them off, and then added some chicken stock. And this is what my grandmother Orr used to do. She came from, her maiden name was Balzinski. So she was Polish. And then over here, I've got some potatoes that cook the same way. Okay, I'm going to add a pinch of sugar and a little bit of lemon zest. Okay, Grandma didn't put the lemon zest in.
This is your touch.
But that's my touch. I'm going to add a little bit of butter. Okay, and a little bit of heavy cream.
All right.
Okay, I'm just going to take a whisk and kind of start mashing it up.
Is it slightly peach colored? It's really pretty.
Okay, and that's basically all there is to it. I'm going to turn off the heat and give it a taste test. Pinch more sugar. Pinch more salt. All right, let's serve it up.
There's nothing that warms my heart more than a big bowl of mashed things.
Mashed goodness.
I'm very excited about this. This was a rich dish, but definitely a good one. You heard Chef mention the Burns dinner. That's an annual Scottish tradition around January 25th. So now's the perfect time to try this recipe. Find it at eartheats.org. Daniel Orr foraged for grape leaves in the first half of our show, but he's also a very thoughtful gardener. To make sure he has plenty of potatoes come summertime, he prepares early.
Right around St. Patrick's Day, I fill up my baskets. And these are, you could use any type of basket, whether it was plastic or terracotta or one of these old wooden orchard baskets, and fill it up with a nice composted material. And then you plant your potatoes in it. Now, the way that you plant potatoes is you get seed potatoes, and you cut them into little pieces, and you always want to have each piece have a few of the eyes on it. And then you let those dry out for a day or two so they build kind of a little barrier, moisture barrier, and then you plant them kind of eyes up into your compost. The great thing about this is that they're so easy to harvest that it keeps a lot of the moles away from them because they're protected. And when you're ready to make that potato salad for 4th of July, they'll be ready. All you have to do is dump the basket out, and you've got a bunch of potatoes.
All right, so mark that on your calendar. In mid-March, plant your potatoes. We'll try to give you a little reminder. But that's not to say that there isn't an abundance of fresh food right now across the frigid Midwest. Visit the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market, and you'll see winter squash and eggs and beautiful greens from a hydroponics farm and some other non-edible items, too.
I'm Kathy Crossan, and our farm is Red Rosa Farm in Owen County. So what are you selling today? This maybe is the most unique table at the market.
Well, thank you very much. We have the alpaca yarns. We have a herd of upwards of 100 alpacas. Well, we shear in the late spring when it's reliably warm enough, but and so the animals don't get hot in the summer. And my partner, Kenny, hand shears them with just fabric shears, all 100-odd animals, just gently without restraint because we didn't like the professional shearers who come in and are kind of rough with the animals. And we have the bags of fleece that I then combine into color lots, and I hand wash them and pick them free of debris, and then I take them in color batches to a mill.
Well, it's beautiful. Do you knit or crochet yourself?
Oddly, I don't. I have come to this from the animal side of things, and so I have to fake it that I know anything about knitting. And
okay, so you're also selling seeds.
The garden seeds have become the primary focus of our agricultural side. I've always saved seeds for myself, but about 5 years ago, I started offering our tomato seeds. And so I grow those in a two-year rotation. So we offer about 60 varieties of heirloom tomatoes. And, of course, I've selected for my very favorites over time.
What is your very favorite?
I always tell people if I could take one tomato to a desert island, it would have to be the Cherokee Purple. But I now have a kind of triumvirate of favorites. The Great White is a fantastic slicing tomato. And also the Orange Russian, which is a heart-shaped bicolor. Beautiful and very tasty.
So if I want tomatoes in the summer, when should I be planting your seeds?
Well, you can start them indoors. We're starting them now. But then you have to nurse them along with lights and cameras and action and all this. I've had very good luck with just direct seeding them, and that's what a lot of home gardeners might want to do.
What does that mean?
I just set the cages out and then plant 5 or 6 seeds in each cage in about late April, and I've had very good luck with that, and then they quickly catch up to the started plants that you would put in, you know, put the plant in the ground.
You know, what I'm also learning is gardeners look at seed catalogs and go to tables like yours and look at the seeds, and they start salivating, thinking about what they can plant and what they can grow.
Well, the seed business has become very competitive, and I know I've been getting a glossy catalog every other day from seed companies. But
the difference is that your seeds, grown in southern Indiana, and you're picking the seeds
here.
That are going to really be hardy in this area.
They should be, yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate this.
You are so welcome.
If you're looking to find a winter market in your neck of the woods, do a search on the website localharvest.org. That really is one of the coolest resources for folks wanting to dip their toes into the local food movement. Thanks for tuning in today, and thanks to all these folks who helped make Earth Eats possible. Abon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Kathy Crossan, Luann Johnson, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Joshua Plug, and everyone at Harvest Public Media and the Bloomington Winter Farmers Market. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all 4 locations and a garden center at East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. One final plug for our website, eartheats.org. See you in a week. I'm Annie Corrigan.